is Wildcat Insider with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, and KMAN Sports Director John Kurtz.
Welcome into Wildcat Insider. I am John Kurtz, joined by the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, Stephen Schaefer, sitting in for Mitch Fortner. Today, K-State loses 65-43 at West Virginia. Spring football starts this week. Gene Taylor is set to join the show in hour two, so a lot to get to here today. And how could I forget? I was there all weekend. Baseball gets a series sweep over Western Michigan, which was good to see and much needed for those guys and where their season is at. So, you know, we pulled out a bit from the dark doldrums of winter when there was nothing but losing around everywhere. K-State did beat Oklahoma last week. Easy to forget that that was just a week ago. So, you know, it feels like spirits have picked up a little bit for everybody at this point.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. With that said, it was a frustrating second half at West Virginia. It was a day where K-State, I think, really put forth a good effort. Most of the day, there was a stretch where it wasn't quite as good. But simply stated, 29% on the road field goal shooting is not going to beat a top 10 team like that. It's just what it is. They played without Nigel Pack. And so, you know, you felt like they were making some progress with the win at TCU, and you follow that up with Oklahoma, and I think they had made some progress, but then you have that happen, and now you just hope that, you know, you can get Nigel back and look forward to the Iowa State game this weekend and then on to the tournament. But, yeah, I will say this. West Virginia, I don't know what the lower body injury was to Miles McBride, but when they were only up four, guess who was in that starting lineup to start the second half?
Yeah, they didn't waste a whole lot of time in getting him into the game.
They did not, and I guess the point of the story is they've got good players, and they're hard to beat there, and this may not be Hug's best team, but they still defend at a pretty decent level, and it was a physical game. It was a tough game.
I felt like in a lot of ways, so I can just give you my brief perspective on this because it was different than those who watched the game live. I was out at baseball and didn't get to see the game live, but I was just following along the score as I was sitting there doing the game. And I was like, okay, it's close. It looks like the defense is pretty good. Quick check of Twitter. It seems like everybody's impressed with the defense. Mm-hmm. And then in the second half, it kind of falls apart and the offense just never came around. And I thought, well, how many times have I seen that movie before this year? I mean, I expected pretty much the same thing. But I will say, in watching it back, I did think it still felt like the defense was the same defense we had seen the last couple of weeks, where maybe it was unfair to say this was totally the same movie that we've seen a bunch of different times, because
I agree.
The defense still feels improved, and it still was West Virginia's worst conference offensive output of the season. So I think they still do deserve some credit for that. It's just, man, when this team plays without Mike McGurl, they just do not have any offense. And that was the same story again. It's not like they were all terrible shots that they were getting. There were a lot of turnovers, but then also just a lot of open jumpers that are being missed. I mean, it just, at this point, it is what it is. They need better shot-making ability on the team.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair. And I'm looking here at the box score, and in the first half, where K-State is down just 26-22, they were 7 of 25, that's 28%. And 3 of 9 from 3, 5 of 9 at the free throw line. The foul shots hurt a little bit, obviously, but you hold West Virginia to 9 of 27, 33%. The difference is K-State comes back and shoots a little tiny bit better at 30%, but West Virginia in the second half was at 50%. And they started the half on a 7-0 run. That run turned into, I think it was 19-2. And at that point, you know, about halfway through that, you could see the guys lose the focus a little bit. They came back and finished the game, you know, I think defending at a pretty decent level. But I think what you're saying is accurate. This was more along the lines of the last couple of weeks as opposed to what we saw pretty continuously through January and first part of February probably. So, but again, it does come down to making shots. They had some good looks, to be honest with you. I remember a Fleury early in the game there and saying at the first media timeout, Antonio Gordon was 1 for 5. One of those shots was a bad three-point shot, and I mean a bad one. But the other four were right within 5 or 6 feet of the bucket. And you got to just be better than 1 for 4. And it's not that I'm picking on him. It's about everybody, you know. That I mean, even I was talking with Davion after he did the Zoom meeting with the media there, and he was frustrated by missing, you know, what he described as a couple of 2 or 3 shots right around the rim, and he wasn't alone. And that was they knew that they were – here, I guess I'll stop there and say this. I really think we've seen some progress with this team in some areas. And I think the biggest thing that you can take out of the last couple of weeks is that they have been better defensively, but maybe even most importantly that not a lot of people are talking about is that they've figured out how hard it is you have to play to compete and have a chance at this level. To me, that's a big thing, because I'm telling you, in the first half, their fight against West Virginia was legit. They were fighting them. It wasn't a pretty game, but they were fighting.
This team's not going to be able to hang in pretty games. They have to ugly it up.
Right.
So I would agree with you. I think that is actually pretty accurate, and it seems to be some of the growth of this team, and that's shown up mostly on the defensive end, because it would stand to reason if you were a team that didn't realize how tough and hard you had to play. Once you realize that, it's going to show itself and manifest itself more on the defensive end than it is the offensive end.
Yeah.
And I think that's been apparent. One thing I want to hit on that you mentioned there was talking about Antonio around the basket. Fran had a comment during the game where he basically said, like, okay, that's where Antonio Gordon needs to hit the weight room really hard
Sure. This
offseason, because it wasn't even just some of the missed shots. There was one opportunity where he gets a rebound right at the rim, and he's not even thinking about turning around and going back up with it. He just wants to pump it right back out when, hey, what you want to do is just go straight back up with that. And that's They don't have a lot of that going on underneath the basket right now. I mean, like, Casey is the one guy who's big and strong enough inside there to be that aggressive.
Sure. Yeah, and I, you know, this isn't just exclusivity with Antonio. I think there are a lot of young players in this program that need to get stronger. I mean, you have a Selton Miguel who is a little bit different from the standpoint of his body is just more mature, and he's stronger than a lot of guys on the team just by human nature. He too will get stronger, and that's exciting, because he's kind of one of those guys that I'm talking about. His numbers are better. If you really look at what he's done in the league on both ends of the floor, he's done a pretty good job. Nigel, we know about that. Davion, we know about that. And I so appreciate Mike, because think about what he was asked to do Saturday with the pressure they put on, and without Nigel at all, and very limited really with Rudy. You know, you're asking him to guard their best guy most of the time, bring the ball up, score, all of those. That's a heavy load, and he did his best. But 3 of 11 is, you know, that's a hard day at the office. So, again, ups and downs, but growth, but not good enough to beat a team like that, simply stated, I guess.
Yeah, I think two things are really happening that stand out quite a bit. It's they are turning the ball over so much and not hitting shots at the same time. And the lack of shot-making ability, I think, is something that is not necessarily age-related. That can just be skill, talent, whoever it is that's on the team, needing to recruit more of that. I think the turnover part is where you see the youth really show up, where there's just a lot of that. Now, I mean, I say that, and Mike McGurl seems to be a pretty consistent culprit, and he had 5 turnovers in the game to just 4 assists. But that's one of those things where it's like, okay, if you cut the turnover numbers down a bit, then maybe that makes the difference in at least a couple games this year, even if you still were the same team that can't shoot above 30% from three-point range as a team. That would still make a world of difference, but they have both of those bugaboos going on right now offensively, and that just holds them back a lot.
Yeah, and again, it's a team game. There's no doubt about that. You can't argue that. But and this will sound like I'm picking a little bit on one particular guy, but when you are minus anyone, but in particular your, quote, quarterback, you need everybody to do a little bit more. And I think you saw really good effort from a lot of guys. But hopefully with good effort comes good results most of the time. Not always, but most of the time. And the reality of it is that if you look at the numbers, and I really, really appreciate DeJuan and how hard he plays, but he had a tough game. It would have helped had he been, you know, a little bit better on the offensive end. He was over. And sometimes I think he too is, even though he's not a freshman, he's a young sophomore, but he is. There are games when he does really, really well with the things that he's good at. And then other games, it seems like he maybe tries to do a little bit too much, and that's where I think he gets into trouble. And I think that was the case Saturday. He knew Nigel wasn't there and that everybody needed to take a step up and do a little bit more, and it just didn't work out for him Saturday.
And he has shown some improvement here recently offensively, at least to just getting to the basket. I mean, yes. There have been some nice moments when nobody else can really do much offensively. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, the stat line is tough to argue with. No points, 0-5, 5 turnovers, no assists. That's a rough game.
And Luke Kosupke was 1-for-6 and 0-for-4. He would tell you that he's just not shot the ball well.
I mean, he's missing wide-open looks.
He's had a lot of good open looks. And I know it's different in the game than it is in practice, but when you – I see practice some and – he makes a lot of those shots in practice. I'm just telling you, he does. He just got to take it from the practice floor to the game floor, and I hope eventually that he does, because I don't think it would take a lot to get him cooking a little bit, but he's struggled the last few games shooting the ball.
And again, he is somebody that didn't play at the beginning of the year. He had to try and get caught up midseason.
Sure.
Like that's tough. It's a difficult thing. It is. At some point, you need to make shots, but right now I think he is fighting it in that
regard.
You want
to put it into perspective for you?
Yeah.
He missed 13 games and now has played in 13 games.
There you go.
That's pretty much it.
There you go. And again, has been thrust into, like a lot of these guys on this team, a role that may be too much for him to be taking on right now in an ideal scenario.
Yeah.
Right? Just because of where this roster is at.
I would say if you're a K-State fan and you're looking at him, this is another guy that an off season in the weight room and in the gym and working on his game will benefit him in a large way, because he meets the criteria in a lot of ways of a guy, at least from my perspective, that can do some things with as an example. I think he can shoot the ball. He hasn't, but I think he can. I think he'll get better at it. I think he's a good defender, but I think he'll get better at it. He really has a pretty good feel for the game. He's still learning everything that K-State's doing because he missed so much time. But as he develops there, I think you'll see better results too.
Would agree. All right, coming up, Tremaine Carroll, K-State's new strength coach. There was some cool audio released from him by K-State. We'll hear from him. And get into what I think are some of the biggest spring football storylines as practice starts this week. You're listening to Wildcat Insider. Back on Wildcat Insider, John Kurtz with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. We are going to talk some spring football because this week, spring football practice starts, I believe, on Wednesday, correct?
Yes.
First practice on
that
Wednesday. I know we'll start having some press conferences late this week and on into the next couple of weeks, which I'm very much looking forward to as well. Now, we talked last week about Tremaine Carroll, who was the new hire, and that actually broke, I think, during the show last week, right? That K-State had hired a new strength and conditioning coach, and I thought it was very cool of K-State to release some audio of one of his initial meetings with the team in front of the entire team. So to get a taste of what Tremaine Carroll is all about, here you go.
How you feel?
Fired up.
How you feel?
Fired up.
All right, guys, I'm fired up, too. Like Coach said, my name is Tremaine Carroll. I go by True. Y'all call me Coach True. I got a wife. Her name is Jarnae Carroll. We've been married going on 9 years. We got a 3-year-old son named Deuce, and he's a beast. And y'all going to see him running through here, so y'all better watch out. I look forward to developing real relationships with y'all. Not just relationships, but real relationships. You know, it's authentic. And it starts with trust and respect. Respect you don't got to ask for. I'm going to come in every day, going to respect you, treat you, talk to you like a man every single day. And women in here for the women. But that's what we need back in return, fellas. That's non-negotiable. You going to get that, so that's what we going to require. Y'all got that? Y'all got that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then the trust is going to be built over time, obviously. I can't just tell you to trust me just because you don't know me from a can of paint. I've coached a bunch of guys that a lot of you guys are familiar with, you know, but I don't want you riding on that reputation either. I want the opportunity to earn your trust, just like I'm going to give you opportunity to earn mine. That makes sense?
Sir.
I like it. I like it. A lot of energy.
Yeah.
A lot of energy.
I think to do that job, you have to have a certain amount of energy, don't you? I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, and I just thought that was a really cool piece of audio there because it kind of gives you a sense of he's going to be an up-tempo, high-energy kind of guy, and I think that's great. I think basically he's I don't know how to explain this, but an excitable guy about work that – some kids don't get that excited about. You got to get them excited about doing it because you make football players in the off season, right? In terms of getting them bigger and stronger, and he's right at the front of the list right now, and he's hitting the ground running.
And it is clearly something very important because I played the audio. Let's see if I can call it up here real quick on the fly. But you know, a quote that we heard at the end of the year from Chris Klieman was about. Now they need to get bigger, faster, and stronger. It was after the Texas game.
Yes.
You know, I mean, they had the Texas game where they kind of get run over by the Longhorns, and that was the reaction after the game, which I think was a fair one, to be honest.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Again, Coach Klieman, just a couple of years into this, I think he has a lot of goals for the program, and one of them is that, to be bigger and stronger. You know, another would be to have more quality depth that they continue to work on. That isn't something that happens overnight. And as you know, they've also been working on, you know, just kind of the commitment to the program, everybody on the same page kind of thing. So there's a lot of work being done over there in a time where most people, you know, don't necessarily see that kind of stuff. But with spring football starting, I think we'll hear a little bit more about it here in the next 30 days or so.
Yep. Here is the quote from Chris Klieman after the Texas game.
We're still a long ways away as far as getting kids, not to buy in, but getting kids to be bigger, faster, stronger. That's got to be them making the commitment to say, you know what, I wasn't as good as the kid I went across against today or last week or 2 weeks ago and whatever it was. And I have to take that ownership of myself and get to be bigger and stronger.
So to your point about that happening in the offseason, that's the kind of thing that has to happen in the offseason. Have you had a chance to talk with Tremaine Carroll?
I have not yet. No, I hope to hear very, very soon. I know he's excited to be here. They're excited to have him here. And again, I think just listening to the audio, you get excited because of his excitement level. I'm pumped about that, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's you're hearing him say this is all about give me a chance, you know, work hard, I'll help you, you know, those kind of things. And why would you not give him a shot, right? I mean, he seems like a very genuine guy with lots of energy, and let's go to work.
I also like the phrase, you don't know me from a can of paint. I'm going to have to take that one because
it's hard not to notice that one.
Yeah, that's a nice little colloquialism right there.
Yeah.
So if I asked you what the biggest storyline of spring football is, what would you say?
Oh, boy. Biggest storyline. Without giving it a whole heck of a lot of thought, I'm going to kind of go back to what we were touching on a moment ago. I think this team, every year is different. It's a cliche, but it is the truth. I want to see those veteran guys who steps forward and leads. I think we know who a few of them are going to be. Who else, right? Those are the kind of things that are happening now, too, kind of behind the scenes. I think we can safely say, as an example, Skylar Thompson will be one of the lead guys for this football team. Even though he's very young, I think a lot of people would say, you know, somebody like a Deuce Vaughn in the job that he did, the work ethic in which he brings to the table, that kind of sticks out. There are others. You mentioned you know, a couple of other guys there. And I just think that you have to – Noah Johnson comes to mind.
Jerron McPherson.
Those kind of guys, I think they'll be front and center. But who else jumps out there too? Because there's always one or two, right? Could it be one of the newcomers? You know, one of the transfer guys? Who knows? To me, that it starts there. Then from there, I think, and I'm just being honest about this, the one area that I will be watching a lot in the springtime is the linebacking core. I think there's some question there. K-State lost a couple of pretty good players there that had been here a long time. And we saw Daniel Green do some okay things, you know, filling in there late. Couple of other guys too. I mean, you've got to have good players there, and they need Cody Fletcher, Daniel Green, and others to step up. Who are those other guys? I'm intrigued by that. There are lots of questions, but I'll start with those two. How about you?
I think linebacker is a great one to bring up because yeah. I think if we were talking about like just more global storylines, then to me it is. Okay, how much of a continuation of this, I'll say shift in the culture, maybe revitalization of the culture is the better way to say it after what happened toward the end of last year. How much does that continue to take hold in the spring? But I think that's a nearly impossible thing for any of us to actually judge, those of us who won't be at practice every single day,
sure,
involved in the minutia of everything. So then you branch out to, I think what a casual fan or like a sexier storyline would be is like, okay, well, what happens at quarterback with the two young guys since Skyler is, at least as far as we know, the last we heard, not going to be able to throw a ball during spring ball. So, okay, what does that mean for Will Howard and what does that mean for Jake Rubley? But I think the more pertinent storyline, honestly, is linebacker. Like, to me, that is where I would have started, and that's ultimately what I would have said my answer would be is what happens at linebacker because you lost Elijah Sullivan and Justin Hughes. Levi Archer left the team. Mm-hmm. Wayne Jones changed positions, so now all of a sudden he is a linebacker. And then Cody Fletcher, Daniel Green, influx of Eric Munoz.
Yes.
And then a couple former walk-ons, Austin Moore, Nick Allen. That's your group. There are things to like, and we can parse all of that out, but there are also, I think, some major holes and major questions, especially losing somebody just as rock-solid as Elijah Sullivan.
Yeah, you know, that... That's the thing that sticks out because Elijah was there a lot in the last several years. There's no question about that. Justin Hughes, too. I've always liked Daniel Green. I think he has a chance to be a really, really good player, and I think he will be a good player for K-State this year. Cody Fletcher's smart and tough. Been around here long enough now, he kind of knows what's going on. But after that, that's kind of the story, I think, because – what about Munoz? Can he put himself into a mix to maybe potentially be a guy that can, if he's not a starter, a major contributor? Because you need more than two, let's be honest. I mean, sometimes the starting thing is a little bit overdone, I think. You need depth at this level, man, and he can help whether he's a one or a two. Nick Allen is a guy that is a – he's been a really good special teams guy. He was kind of going to get, you know, some chances, and then things happened last year and, you know, all of that. I mean, last year was last year, but COVID, you know, things happen. And who else did you mention there?
Austin Moore.
Oh, yeah, Austin's the same thing. I mean, he's another guy who was seen that I really like him in the special teams area, and I think he's gotten better and better too. That's what this spring will be all about, and it isn't just the linebacking position, but I'm just being blunt about that. I think that's where I would start for sure, just because it's the, in my mind, the biggest question mark.
Yeah, I guess I would say I feel like they have a lot of nice depth pieces.
Yeah.
But the question to me will be do they have a frontline guy or two?
Sure.
Because I'm with you. They played in tandems of two. That was something Joe Klannerman said last year. They prefer to do is keep two guys together, so it'd be Hughes and Sullivan. They'd come out for Fletcher and Green.
Uh-huh.
They clearly want to play for linebackers regularly. But you also had a guy in Elijah Sullivan who was at least a, you know, I say like a frontline kind of Big 12 talent, like a legitimately good
sure.
Big 12 starting linebacker. And that would be my question now. is somebody going to be able to take a step up here? Because even Munoz, I mean, he was kind of a spot starter at Utah State, so does he have that in him to take a step forward here at this level?
And Wayne is kind of a wild card for me because, you know, it hasn't been that long ago he was going to be a starting guy in that secondary, right? And I think with the way this is evolving, he could put himself in the mix at linebacker. He's a good enough athlete to do that. Is he undersized a little bit? Sure. But we've seen undersized linebackers have success here before. You know, not everybody looks and plays like Arthur Brown or Mark Semenoe or whoever else you want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Josh Buell was out there weighing like 160 pounds playing linebacker.
Yeah, and he was heart of a lion, man. Take that in a heartbeat. But there are other guys that, you know, just thinking about, just sitting here looking at my list. I mean, what will they get out of a guy like Rush East or some of those newcomer guys like Munoz, who we talked about? In the 2 years that Coach Klieman has been here and this staff, I think that's been an area where they have had an influx of talent, Riley Moore, you know, that helps. If that happens again, and you hope it does, it could lead to some pretty cool things.
We'll talk some more spring football storylines because on that note, Riley Moore in particular, I do want to talk about the tight ends. I think that's another intriguing position heading into spring. But K-State baseball had a great start to their home season with 3 wins over Western Michigan over the weekend. We'll talk about what K-State did and what went right coming up next. Back here on Wildcat Insider, I'm John Kurtz, joined by Wyatt Thompson. K-State baseball picks up a sweep of Western Michigan over the weekend. They are off to a 5-2 start, and if not for one blown lead against New Mexico, this team would be 6-1. They've really played pretty good baseball so far this year, and the important part about the weekend series against Western Michigan is, hey, go out and get your wins. Start stacking wins during this homestand where you have 8 games against pretty overmatched competition that you should be beating. And they did that. And Eastern Illinois, who's in this weekend, will not be, I don't think there's any way, as talented or as capable a squad as Western Michigan, which at least had some big-time bats. It was an offense that scored 8.5 runs per game last year, which was top 15 in the NCAA. So it was nice to see. And K-State's pitching, for the most part, held up there, outside of some shakiness on Friday, but I think all things considered, you take the 3 wins, especially in the manner that some of those happened in.
Well, we were talking off air, and my biggest thing, and I was traveling Friday, of course, with basketball, and didn't really pay much attention at all to the Friday game until almost after the fact. And winning that first game is such a big deal, and the way they did it after being down 4-0, and then 8-4, I think it was.
Yep.
To find a way to win that, and Jordan Wicks actually, I mean, he basically made one bad pitch, and it cost him, and it was a 3-run shot, and all of a sudden you're down 4-0. And then to win that game, I think, set the tone, because you come back and pretty much handle him Saturday and find a way to win Sunday, and that's the way you go. You know, that's the way you do it. And I do think the pitching has been pretty solid, no doubt about that, especially the starting pitching. I think would it be fair to say they hit okay this weekend? Better? Decent?
Decent.
Yeah, decent. Want more? Probably, but decent. I'm anxious to see, you know, what next weekend looks like. And because you just got to – I mean, the one thing about college baseball that's so true year in and year out, it seems like the non-con goes pretty darn fast, and then all of a sudden you're into those grinder Big 12 weekends, and it gets here in a hurry.
Yeah. Yes, very true. I would say that the offense was a half tick better than what we saw in the opening weekend plus out in Surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Starting pitching in general may have been down just a half tick as well, but a lot of that was just because of what happened with Jordan Wicks, which is, I mean, look, it's a completely unfair standard to hold him to because he is such a dominant force. But giving up 4 earned runs, I mean, he made it 6 innings, gave up 4 earned runs. He's 1 run away from it technically being a quality start.
Exactly.
But you're not used to seeing that. You're not used to seeing him give up a home run. In fact, it was the first that he had allowed in 679 days. To put that into perspective.
That's crazy when you think. I mean, let's be honest. That's insane. And when it was all said and done, in six innings, he strikes out 10.
That's the thing. And walks one.
And walks one.
So it felt weird talking about that as a storyline where it's, you know, I thought the impressive part of the win was that K-State, long story short, got a win when their man who's invincible out there on the mound that you always feel like is going to hold the opponent to one or two runs and put you in position to win actually gave up more than that, and you were trailing when he exited the game. That's not something that happens often, and the team still fought through and won it.
Nothing quite like a five-run bottom of the eighth to pull it out, right? And again, I think that's the deal. Then you come right back on Saturday, and you get a pretty decent start from Seymour. He goes five innings, allows one earned run. And then on Sunday, McCullough, that's a couple of pretty good starts for him, actually. Five and a third there, giving up with what, six strikeouts and a walk, one earned run. I think you kind of take that about every time if you're going to get it.
Yeah, and you know the other part of this, too, is offensively, I mean, the star has been Nick Goodwin.
Oh, boy.
It's unbelievable what he is doing. He hits the three-run game-tying shot in the five-run bottom of the eighth for K-State in that game on Friday. He had another home run throughout the weekend. He had four hits, a double that drove in a run, two home runs in the series. And this early in his K-State career, leading the team in average now at 360, leading the team in home runs, leading the team in runs batted in, tied for the lead in on-base percentage with a 500 OBP so far this year. As a true freshman who's been thrown in the lineup batting in anywhere from two through four, he's batted second, third, and fourth. And as another guy, as Pete Hughes pointed out, that didn't get a high school senior season because of COVID.
Yes.
I mean, he just came in basically off of a high school junior season and is doing this in a Big 12 lineup.
And the thing is, it's you've seen him. I haven't, but just going on what everybody is telling me, he appears like he's very comfortable in his skin and like this isn't too big for him. And that's, you know, it's one thing to come in as a freshman who didn't have a senior year and hit seventh or eighth in the lineup. It's a whole other animal hitting second, third, and fourth, right? And that's, I mean, come on. He's been impressive.
He has.
There's no question about that.
Wise beyond his years, mature beyond his years, according to what you
got a little pop in that bat.
He does.
Yes.
He does. He can run. He's been he did have one base running mistake. He got picked off, but he can run. He's got a glove. There's a lot to like there. A lot to like.
Well, and again, to me, if you're looking at the future of K-State baseball, and if those are the kind of guys, I mean, not everybody's going to, but you get the point. I mean, you bring in a few like that, you like it. Keep them coming.
And that's what Pete Hughes has been doing. I mean, that's what that guy's been doing. All right, Big 12 basketball was very interesting over the weekend. Cade Cunningham with a performance for the ages, and Baylor actually falls at Kansas. We'll talk about that next on Wildcat Insider. All right, Big 12 basketball this weekend. The headliner is Kansas beating Baylor 71-58. Bears losing for the first time in Big 12 play, dropping to 10-1. I know that Fran on the broadcast of K-State West Virginia was very bullish on the chances of that happening, of Kansas knocking off Baylor, and he was right. And I mean, the simple analysis to do here is Baylor had a very, very long layoff where they missed so many games in a row that it is really difficult to try to just pick it back up and play at the same high level that you've been playing at. Even a team as veteran and deep as Baylor is, and I'm not sure that I have anything deeper than that as far as analysis goes on this game, but it does also probably say something about Kansas legitimately improving.
Oh, I think that's a given. I think both are, probably. It's obvious KU has made pretty significant strides here in the last two or three weeks. They're different and better defensively. Frankly, they're a little bit different and better offensively. They're getting so much more and more consistent play out of the big fella now, McCormick, and that makes such a difference. But you can't – Baylor's had a magnificent year, but it is so difficult to be out for, what was it, 22 days, I think? That's crazy. And at the end of the day, we saw what they're capable of in terms of shooting the ball. They shot 34.8% in Lawrence. and Kansas shot 51%. Baylor was 6 of 26 from 3. I would challenge you to go find another game this year where they did that. The question now is, how quickly can they get back into what they really are, right? Which I think is a high-level defensive team. I've taped the game, haven't watched it, but I'm told that they kind of did a little bit of the one-on-one kind of stuff too, as opposed to, you know, boom, 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 moving that ball and getting it swung side to side and getting wide open looks. And this isn't the time of year to become selfish. Go do what you do.
Well, and you bring up the point about how quick can you turn it around. They're going to West Virginia tomorrow,
yep.
And then 2 days later they play Oklahoma State, and 3 days later they play Texas Tech.
Correct.
I mean, this is as wild a week as we'll probably ever see a Big 12 basketball with all these games needing to be made up here. That's three straight top 20 teams that you have to go play, one of which is on the road. So, yeah, there's not much time to figure it out if you don't have it figured out right now.
Yeah, when was the last time, and I know we're in a pandemic year, but when was the last time you saw in the final week of the regular season 13 games on the docket? One tonight, three tomorrow, five Thursday, two Saturday, two Sunday. I'll tell you when. Never.
It's
no chance.
It's honestly nice. I like having some drama. I mean, I know that Baylor is still likely to win the league, but there's at least some level of drama there, especially with their game tomorrow in Morgantown against West Virginia. I think I like the fact that we're still I like Baylor. I would have preferred to see them beat Kansas for a number of obvious reasons there. I love Scott Drew. I do not like the Kansas Jayhawks, but I will take the storyline of there actually being an opening now for West Virginia and company to try and wedge their way into the Big 12 title discussion here in the last week.
Yeah, it's really such a unique thing through all of this COVID stuff and all of that. But again, I'm anxious to see what Baylor. It's going to be hard for them to win in Morgantown. I mean, even if they play at their optimum level, it's going to be difficult, right? This is, again, I'm not saying that they have a chance to be overtaken by West Virginia. I mean, you would think that they could win two out of the next three, right? You hope?
Would think so.
You think? I don't know if hope's the right word, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But there's risk involved here. West Virginia's pretty good. We got to get Cade Cunningham's 40 and 11 in there, don't we? Wow.
Yeah, 94-90, Oklahoma State wins in Norman in overtime. Cade Cunningham at 40 and 11. That is a dominant performance, man. It was fun to watch the highlights of that. I'm disappointed I was not able to watch that game live as it was happening, but shout out to Cade Cunningham for doing that. And now, those two turn around and play rather quickly. They have to go back at it tonight at 8 o'clock in Stillwater. Now number 16 and number 17 in the country. So surging Oklahoma State. Oklahoma going the opposite way after the loss to K-State and then the loss to Oklahoma State. So See how that plays out tonight. Gene Taylor is going to join us in hour two. But coming up next, I want to get to Kelis Robinette wrote an article where he had Fran Fraschilla's insight on what K-State needs to do to get back to the middle of the pack in the Big 12 next year. We'll discuss that next.